his left. Tough shot. Made it. End of the line.
Bad pass. Tipped away and Indiana's got it. Up the floor to Oladipo. He will lay up. Score!
Jones. Watford for the win.
Yes! Yes!
It's Indiana. It's Indiana.
Welcome back to Podcast on the Brink. I'm your host, Jared Morris. Podcast on the Brink is brought to you by The Assembly Call and Inside the Hall. As many of you know, after every IU basketball game, I host The Assembly Call with my co-hosts Ryan Phillips and Andy Bottoms. We go live as soon as every IU game ends to analyze the game that we just saw, plus look ahead to future opponents. So make sure you join us as soon as the final buzzer sounds, assemblycall.com/live. And, of course, make sure you go to InsideTheHall.com. The guys have really ramped up their post-game coverage this year. Ryan Carrazza's Minute After, post-game reaction from Tom Crean and IU players, reports from Jordan Littman, 5 takeaways from Alex Bozich. The best post-game coverage you'll get anywhere. InsideTheHall.com and AssemblyCall.com. All right, well, this past weekend was obviously an exciting one for Indiana Hoosiers fans as the Hoosiers went on the road and got a win in a place that has been a house of horrors for Tom Crean and the Hoosiers over the past several years. That, of course, being the not-so-real Assembly Hall in Champaign, Illinois. But in a game of runs and wild momentum swings, Indiana was able to overcome Illinois, have the final run go in their favor, and escape with an 80-74 victory. It was a huge victory in that it moved Indiana to 14-4 on the season, pushed them to 4-1 in the Big Ten Conference, and frankly, the Hoosiers are in a much better position than any of us could have ever imagined when the season started. Certainly, you can count Alex Bozich, editor of Inside the Hall, among those people who are surprised by what Indiana has been able to do, and he was among the more optimistic folks before the season started. So for this episode of Podcast on the Brink, I decided to bring Alex back, and we looked back at what the expectations were before the season, how Indiana has done now, and kind of what have been the primary factors that have allowed Indiana to exceed what people thought they could do. And then we take a look at some individual performances like Troy Williams, Yogi Ferrell, James Blackman Jr. and Robert Johnson, analyze those guys, and then look ahead to what Indiana will have to do to have this season end in success, which I think for most of us would be a trip back to the NCAA tournament. All of that and more on this episode of Podcast on the Brink. And just a quick note, I actually forgot to plug in my microphone before conducting this interview with Alex, so the audio is not going to sound quite as good as it usually does. It's a little bit echoey because actually my computer just picked it up, so my apologies for that. I will make sure to check the microphone before next time. It's still perfectly fine to listen to. It won't be too hard for you, but just wanted you to know why it sounds a little bit different this time than it did last time. All right, everybody, thanks for listening. Here's the latest episode of Podcast on the Brink.
Alex, welcome. How you doing?
I'm doing good, Jared. It's been a while since we've spoken. A lot has transpired, so it's good to catch up and talk about the current state of the Hoosiers.
That is very true, and actually that's where I want to start, because I want you to kind of go back mentally to that time when we last spoke, before the season, and imagine if I had told you at that point that when we're talking today on January 19th, Indiana would be 14-4, 4-1 in the conference with 2 road wins, including one at Illinois, plus a win over a top 25 team. Your response would have been what?
I would have been very surprised. I mean, I don't think there's anybody right now that can really say they saw 14-4 coming, just because of, you know, the momentum at that time was so negative. So many things were up in the air. There were so many questions. There was questions, of course, about the off-court stuff, but also on the court. There was, you know, Devin Davis, who was expected to be a pretty big piece, lost for an extended period of time, maybe the season. There was questions of, you know, how the off-court stuff would affect the team on the court. And to this point, I think that it's really hard to find many faults with how this team's performed. Obviously, there's still a long way to go. A lot can happen, and this isn't, you know, by any means a declaration that this team has achieved anything to this point. But, you know, if you're sitting here on January 19th at 14-4 with a 4-1 record and 2 Big Ten road wins, I think you've got to be pretty ecstatic, whether you're part of the program or just a fan watching from afar.
So what is it? I mean, to what do you attribute this unexpected success, at least to this point? I mean, obviously, you know, Dan Dockich yesterday was tweeting out that Tom Crean deserves National Coach of the Year consideration, and I don't know that I would disagree with him. But what are some of the factors that to you are the most important in Indiana overcoming, you know, those low expectations earlier in the year to do what they've done so far?
I think as far as the on-court chemistry and kind of how they've played, this is probably going to be something that we're going to go back and look at, you know, if this team does continue to play well and make the tournament. I mean, but I can't help but think that the trip to Montreal helped quite a bit as far as just kind of getting a head start on the season and getting these guys out there with the extra practices and the game experience. That was obviously a huge thing in my mind. And beyond that, I think it's basically just this is a better – I mean, for all of the talk of, you know, the front court problems and obviously the front court situation isn't ideal right now, but this team in the back court is just so much better than last year's team. The mix of players is better. The chemistry seems better. And I know that the chemistry thing is something that it's easy to talk about when things aren't going so well, but I just feel like this group is gelled better on and off the court. That's really at this point, kind of how I'm viewing it.
So, you know, an interesting point you bring up there with the Canada trip, because if people remember, Indiana played that five-game series in Canada, and they played it without Hunter Mascara-Perea, who wasn't able to make the trip. Do you think at all that experience of playing without Hunter, when they kind of expected him to be there, that experience of playing without him is helping them deal with his absence right now?
Yeah, it's funny you ask that, because actually somebody asked one of the players that after the game yesterday, and I don't exactly remember who it was, because we talked to four different guys after the game, but you know, they kind of said, yeah, a little bit. And I think there's something to that to an extent that, you know, they're used to kind of playing smaller. You know, the lineups we saw, I remember that first game in Canada, they basically started five guards. And, I was thinking to myself, this isn't hopefully not a preview of what's going to come in the regular season. But at this point, I mean, they really are starting three guards, and then I guess you can call Troy Williams more of a wing and Colin Hartman a forward, but it kind of works both ways as far as, you know, the lineups that they're running out there right now. You know, it's tough for Indiana to match up defensively, but also these teams are having to match up and guard Indiana, which, as we saw yesterday, Nana Egwu and Colin Hartman was a matchup that Indiana won, which, you know, if going into that game, if you would have said, you know, Indiana's going to foul out Egwu in 27 minutes and he's not going to score, and Colin Hartman's going to, you know, make some key plays on both ends, and I wouldn't have believed it. But you know, it kind of works, I think, in a lot of ways in Indiana's favor that the teams are kind of being forced to kind of play their style. I mean, look at the Ohio State game; they have a 6'11" McDonald's All-American on the bench in the key moments. They have Anthony Lee, who everybody freaked out, you know, that Indiana didn't get as a transfer, who can barely get on the court. And then they have another guy who's 6'9", about 240, that couldn't even get on the court in that game either. And that was all because Indiana was going small and kind of forced Ohio State to play their style. So there's going to be teams, obviously, like Purdue and Wisconsin that are going to have a dominant big man. But in this league right now, not having a true center or a guy that can only score in the post isn't killing Indiana, because there's just not a lot of other teams that they really have that.
You know, and a big reason why Indiana has been able to overcome that, you know, you mentioned the difficulty other teams are having matching up with us on offense. And a big part of that is Troy Williams. I mean, it's no coincidence that he's had four really good games and one complete no-show. And Indiana has basically had four good games in the Big Ten, four wins and one complete no-show at Michigan State. Now, I have to eat some crow a little bit, because I wrote a blog post and even posted in the Inside the Hall forum earlier this year that, you know, Troy needs to stop dribbling so much. He needs to stop trying to create off the dribble and do what he does best, which is work the baseline and let other people create for him so he can finish. But when you look back at that Canada trip, you know, a big storyline was that, you know, Troy's playing some point guard, and everybody's like, what? You know, how are you letting this guy who seems like he can't take care of the ball play point guard? And yet, over these last 6-7 games, we've really seen Troy blossom as a guy who is really effective with the ball in his hands. Ball, you know, he's improving as a passer. His ball handling is clearly better, his dribbling, in terms of being able to make effective dribbles to get him toward the basket. You know, and it's really been remarkable to watch. What, you know, what has impressed you the most about his growth from the start of the season till now, and maybe even all the way back to that Canada trip, since obviously you were there?
I just think he appears as a lot more confident and polished as far as, like, his moves offensively. Like, last year I felt like a lot of everything he did was just basically raw athleticism and, you know, just instinct. And now, you know, just take yesterday, for example, there was a play, I think, where he was kind of, like, back to the basket in the post, and he kind of, like, to turn around, like, a nice little dump shot that he knocked in. Last year he wasn't doing that type of stuff. He was pretty much just putting his head down trying to go to the rim. This year it seems like, in the past couple of games, I've noticed some of Indiana's best offensive possessions are where Troy is making something happen off the dribble. And then when you have three or four guys on the perimeter that can make shots, the defense is going to collapse, and he can either, you know, if the defense isn't going to collapse, he can get all the way to the rim and maybe dish off there at the basket. Or if it does collapse, you know, the ball usually goes out to the perimeter and the defense breaks down, you know, as the ball moves around the perimeter. So I found like, when, you know, a lot of instances where Indiana's not finding openings from the perimeter, kind of the best way to get it started is Troy kind of going to the basket and then kicking it out and kind of moving the ball around the perimeter that way, because the defense is forced to sag in. But I just think he's obviously worked a lot on his game in the off season. I think he got off to a slow start because the suspension hurt him quite a bit, as far as, you know, just missing those four games kind of would have been valuable for him. You know, people forget that, you know, he's just a sophomore, and he was really an incomplete player last year. He wasn't really all that great on defense. And offensively, he, you know, teams learned that they could basically, you know, let him shoot from the perimeter. And he's not doing that this year because he realizes it's not his strength. And, you know, when he went to the basket off the dribble, he was turnover prone. And now that he's not making those mistakes, he's really developed into one of the more dangerous guys in the league as far as being able to affect the game in different ways. I mean, he goes to the offensive glass, he can facilitate, and then he can also score in a variety of ways. I mean, that little hook shot he throws up sometimes, and every time he throws it up, I'm like, what? You know, they're just so unorthodox looking, but it goes in a lot. So, I mean, it's obviously something that you know, that's a focus for him, and, you know, whatever works for him, I think, and continuing to build his confidence is kind of what's going to be key for him going forward. But I just think a year, an off season of growth, and we've seen it before when, you know, there's talented players in the program. They stay in Bloomington for the summer. They really make an effort to get better. These are kind of the results that happen.
You know, last year at the end of the year, he actually started making some perimeter jump shots, and I thought the big improvement we'd see from him between year one and year two was an improved jump shot. And as you said, he's really stopped taking jumpers almost altogether. And I think it's right. Been a smart decision, because his shot clearly isn't ready for that. Do you foresee him as a guy with more development who can develop into a consistent jump shooter?
I mean, I think if he wants to have a long career in the pros, he's going to have to at least be respectable from the mid-range and even out to the three-point line. I mean, there's just not a lot of 6'6", 6'7", guys in the NBA that are just pure slash and score guys, and you've got to be able to, because that's just so easy to defend after a while, especially when you've got bigger guys at the rim to protect the basket. But yeah, I think he's going to have to continue to refine his shot and become more consistent. I mean, I think that's really the next step. And I know everyone likes to compare him to Victor and the development there, but if you kind of look at Victor, like when his game like really took off his junior year, it was because his three-point shot had to be respected. And at this point, Troy, he doesn't really have to be respected from the perimeter, but his athleticism and his ability to kind of get past people with the dribble is still pretty hard to stop, even if you kind of back off of him. You just, you know, he's just, I mean, he's athletically, I think he's right up there as far as anybody that's played at IU under Crean.
You know, the other thing that's really impressed me with Troy is just the development of his leadership, at least kind of what you can see just watching the games on the court. you know, demanding the ball, stepping up in big situations. How is Yogi accepting his role this year? I mean, obviously he's scoring less, you know, like yesterday, I think he had 7 points, but he had 9 assists, you know, only 1 turnover. And really in games where he's had to score a lot, they haven't been good games for Indiana. Is he okay with that? I mean, is this the kind of role that he kind of came to Indiana to play and it's something he relishes? Or, you know, do you see him at all kind of chafing at the fact that he's, you know, no longer really a top scoring option for this team?
Yeah, I mean, Tom Crean kind of addressed that yesterday, basically saying that would he like to score more? Yes, but I think, you know, he wants to win more than anything else. And I tend to believe that that's the case. I feel like there's going to be games where he's going to have to make more shots for Indiana to win. I mean, he's in the low 20s right now, 3-point shooting, Big Ten play. And obviously he's a big part of, you know, what this team can do when it's clicking on all cylinders offensively. But I was really impressed with him just kind of, you know, and we saw it a little bit in Canada, and I wondered how it would carry over. But, you know, up there he was, you know, facilitating quite a bit. I mean, he was still scoring, but he was also looking to set other guys up. And I think he, deep down, you know, likes having guys around him that can make shots, because even though he was, you know, the go-to guy last year and scored all these points and had these games where they won and, you know, he had a great game, it couldn't have been a lot of fun playing with a team around him that couldn't shoot, because every game he was, you know, everything was on his shoulders. And now, you know, it's still, there's still a ton on his shoulders as far as, you know, leading the defense and, you know, communicating on the court and, you know, setting other guys up. But I think any player would, you know, would rather play in a situation where they're winning and, you know, getting to share the ball and have a balanced offense than what we saw last year. So, you know, obviously anybody would like to score more, but I think, you know, at this point, I feel like he's accepting it pretty well. And, you know, to me, you know, even if he's shooting bad, he's still playing great. You know, as I tweeted yesterday, he's got 28 assists and only 9 turnovers in Big Ten play. That's better than 3-to-1 assist turnover ratio. So that's pretty impressive.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that he has a huge game Thursday night against Maryland. Home game, crowd will be rocking. You got the hotshot new freshman point guard, Melo Trimble, in the house. You know, chance for Yogi to reassert himself as the top point guard in the conference, which I say he is. I'm going out on a limb and saying he has a big night. Scoring, assists, everything. I want to talk with you about the freshmen, Robert Johnson, James Blackman Jr. Two guys who, you know, came out like gangbusters in the early part of the non-conference schedule, seemed to hit a little bit of a lull, and now the last two games we're starting to see them pick it up again. Robert Johnson was sensational scoring the ball against Penn State. James Blackman Jr. probably had his best overall game against Illinois. Why are we seeing them now kind of come back around? Did they kind of hit a wall and now they've run through it? Is there something they're doing different? What do you attribute their kind of rebound here over the last few games to?
Well, with Blackman, I never really thought it was a freshman slump or a wall or anything. It was just, I always thought it was a matter of time with him, because he's just too good of a shooter to continue to shoot that poorly. And yesterday we kind of saw, you know, when he gets a little room to operate and gets a little time to get a shot off, he's just pure from the outside. And with Johnson, I don't really feel like his offense is really all, you know, the main thing to look at with him. I feel like he does so many little things. I know that going into, I think, the last game, he had the lowest turnover percentage of anybody in the rotation in Big Ten games, so that's been huge. He's had two really good offensive games, but he's had other games where he's, you know, affected the game with his defense and rebounding and things like that. So, well, he's not really, I don't look at him as like a featured scorer on this team, but he's a guy, you know, it's nice to have a guy that can, you know, go off, you know, as your third or fourth scorer for 20, on a given night, which I think that's what he did against Penn State. So both of those guys are just really mature for freshmen. I feel like they've been well coached coming kind of through the high school ranks and AAU. It also helps both of them that they're a year older than most freshmen, so they've kind of, you know, a little bit more mature bodies and spent a little bit more time in the high school level to help their development. So they're kind of both, to me, a little uncommon for freshmen. It's just as far as how they approach the game. They don't seem to get rattled at all. I mean, yesterday, all of the runs back and forth, and neither one, I didn't really see either guy kind of seemed to look like they were frazzled at all, which to me was really impressive considering how loud it was at that place. And just, you know, for Indiana to get those leads like a couple times and then give them right back up, you had to figure at some point they were going to, you know, just kind of let Illinois pull away, and it didn't happen. And I feel like, you know, those guys were a big part of it.
You know, you could probably win a lot of bar bets in Bloomington by asking people who has the highest O rating among IU freshmen. O rating is a measure you see on KenPom that kind of takes into account all of a guy's offensive contributions. But if you ask people who had the highest O rating among IU freshmen, most people would probably say James Blackman Jr. or Robert Johnson. But the answer is actually Emmett Holt, whose 125.9 is actually second on the team to Colin Hartman. Now, he obviously doesn't use as many possessions as Blackman and Robert Johnson, but it does speak to the contributions Emmett has been able to make, you know, kind of thrust into a role that no one really expected him to have when he committed. You know, his rebounding has been really good. He's been efficient. How would you rate Emmett's play, and how much more improvement do you think we can see? Like, what is his ceiling as a freshman? Because clearly he's going to get opportunities, and it's just all about his ability to maximize them.
I think right now for him, it's consistency more than anything else. He's been very good, as you said, on the offensive glass. He's good at finishing. I think he's making almost 70% of his field goal attempts, which is amazing. He does a really good job of getting fouled. That's another thing. If he could, I think he's only shooting in the mid-50s on free throws at this point. If he could, you know, he's got a free throw rate, I think, of 75%, which to those who don't follow advanced stats is, you know, free throws attempted divided by field goals attempted is kind of a measure of, you know, how effective you are at getting to the line, and Emmett does really well there. If he could make free throws at a better percentage, he would be even more valuable offensively. But for him, you know, there was a lot of debate on whether Emmett should start and, you know, whether he deserved to take Hunter's minutes before he got hurt, and then now that Hartman's starting, should Emmett. I think Emmett right now is in a good place as far as his role goes. I think he's comfortable. I feel like if, you know, if Crean thought that he would be more effective in a starting lineup, he'd put him there, but you know, he's not afraid to go to him quickly off the bench. I feel like, you know, with any freshman, especially one that came in as late as he did, there's still a lot for him to pick up as far as the offense goes and positioning, and a lot of what he's done defensively, I feel like he's just been based off of, you know, his length and pure talent. I mean, I feel like there's a lot he has to learn as far as, you know, what it's going to take to be more, to play more minutes, I guess, and play with more regularity in the Big Ten. But for me, I think his ceiling at this point is 20, 25 minutes a game. Just being a guy that can finish plays under the basket and rebound on both ends and block some shots, too. I mean, Indiana's going to need somewhat of a rim presence coming up, you know, in some of these games with going against bigger teams. So, you know, I think Emmett is in a pretty good place as far as his role. I don't really understand the whole argument of putting him in there for more minutes when he's being successful and his body is now. The last thing you'll kind of want to do is throw him in there and then have him lose some of his confidence. So as long as they're winning and continuing to play well, I kind of like the setup they've got going on with their lineup right now.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And obviously those, you know, kind of calls for him to get more minutes are probably going to continue as long as Devin and Hunter are out. Do you have any updates on either of those guys? I mean, how realistic is it that we see either one of those guys again?
I think Hunter will definitely be back. You know, I continue to hear 4 weeks is kind of the goal, which would put him back. I'm trying to think. So today's a Monday. So 3 weeks for the day, roughly, which is still a lot of time to miss. I think there's 6 or 7 more games between now and then, which is obviously a lot. A lot can happen in 6 or 7 games. So I think he's going to have to kind of weather the storm there as far as his front court depth. And as far as Davis goes, at this point, I don't expect him to play this year just because even if hypothetically he was able to come back in February, do you really want to burn a kid's a year of eligibility on a couple of, you know, a month or a month and a half of games when he can really probably come back and have, you know, a bigger impact the next 3 years for your program, especially with things going the way they are. And also just for his well, you know, his sake, and you want to make sure that he's totally 100% right before you even try to bring him back. And his conditioning obviously isn't going to be another thing that he's going to have to work on. So I just feel like at this point, there's not a whole lot of upside of bringing him back.
So let's look big picture here. And obviously the goal, I think at the start of the year, the goal for everybody was just get back to the NCAA tournament. You know, after missing out on tournament play last year, I think everybody would be happy with just getting back to the tournament. And typically, you know, getting a double-digit wins in the Big Ten has been pretty much an automatic in to the NCAA tournament. It's getting to 10 wins. You get to 11 wins, you can start feeling really good about it. Indiana right now sits with, you know, 4 wins after 5 games, 13 to go. So as you project it forward, you know, how do you see Indiana's chances of getting to that double-digit mark before the Big Ten tournament?
I mean, they've got 13 to go. They've only got to go 6-7 in their last 13. Obviously, Matt, I'm not a math major, but that's a pretty simple equation there that for them to get to 10. And they've got, I believe, 7 home games left. So even if they were to go, let's say, 5-2, is that right? They have 7? Yeah, 7 Big Ten home games left. So even if they were to go, say, 5-2 in those and then win one road game, they would be up to 10 wins. So I picked them to finish 10-8 before the season. I think right now that or 11-7 both seem like pretty reasonable projections. And I think at 10-8 with 20 wins going into the Big Ten tournament, I wouldn't call them a lock at that point, but I would think they would have to feel pretty good about their chances of getting back into the tournament and kind of just looking at where things were in early November. You know, I'm not saying that the standard at Indiana should be just to make the tournament, but based on kind of the circumstances of this season and everything that's gone on, I think that they would have to feel pretty good about just getting back to the tournament. And, you know, I don't think there's going to be too many teams that are going to be wanting to see Indiana on the other side of the bracket if it comes to that, just because, you know, they're a team that can come out and hit, you know, 10 or 12 threes in a game and make things interesting. So I kind of view it as getting back to the tournament would be a pretty good accomplishment for this team and a good building block going forward.
Yeah, and, you know, with a lot of underclassmen, you'd have presumably everybody back, you know, unless obviously some freshmen coming in and maybe a guy or two leaving, possibly even going pro, you never know. But that would certainly be something to build on for next year. You know, I don't remember whose it was, but I saw somebody's mock or bracket today that had Indiana as the 9 seed in the Kentucky region. I mean, how great would that be to, you know, to make the tournament, you achieve that goal, you win your first round game, and then Indiana gets to face Kentucky, maybe with a chance to knock them from the ranks of the unbeaten. You know, and at that point, you're kind of playing with house money because no one expects you to win, and you probably won't. But hey, like you said, you get hot. Who knows? So I thought that was pretty interesting because that would be a heck of a second round matchup.
I saw another one too where they were, I think, an 8 or a 9, and we're going to play Villanova, and they were in that bracket. So that'd be fun too, with, you know, all Villanova's guards. That, you know, I think the main thing with this team is, even for the fans, is like not try to get too ahead of anything. You know, I caution people back in early November, you know, things aren't ever as good as they seem and never as bad as they seem. I think right now, looking at kind of some of the numbers of where Indiana's at, they're still in a negative efficiency margin in Big Ten play, which is pretty remarkable to be 4-1, and they're actually giving up more points per possession than they're scoring. They've won a lot of close games. I'm not saying there's a correction as far as coming like imminently at this point, but you know, this next stretch is pretty crucial. You know, they've got the game obviously with Maryland coming up, and then they have 2 tough road games. If they could get a win or 2 in these next 3, I think it really sets things up for them for the last stretch of the season, because we've talked about, you know, and you've talked about it on Assembly Call, and you talked about it through other points of the season. I mean, the back end of the Big Ten schedule is obviously a little easier than the front end. So if you get through this front part with, you know, a 5-4 record or 6-3, you got to feel really good about the direction of things. So we'll see. I think Thursday is going to be a great atmosphere. It's a later tip, so there's not going to be any, you know, reason why fans traveling down from Indy can't get there for the start of the game. It's going to be 2 ranked teams. As we saw, Indiana is now 23rd in both polls, and I think Maryland 13 in the AP. So it's going to be ESPNU game, and should be a fun atmosphere and kind of a good measuring stick for Indiana to kind of see where they're at right now and the chance to, I think, tie for first place in the Big Ten.
Yep. Well, and we know what happens to ranked teams when they come into Assembly Hall. So hopefully that trend continues. As a final question here, you know, we talked a lot coming into the season about how hopefully this year would be a lot different and better than last year. And clearly it has been, both in terms of the success on the court and just kind of the joy watching the team. You know, I mean, it's just such a more fun experience watching this team. And not just because they're winning, but also how they're winning games. I'm curious, from your perspective, being close to it, how is it different? It's obvious to the fans how it's different on the court, but, you know, kind of that behind the scenes feel. Are there pretty clear differences between this year and last?
Yeah, it's funny you ask that, because I was talking to somebody that's really close to the team yesterday, actually before the game, just kind of sitting there talking, and we were just kind of, you know, talking about last season compared to this, and there's not really like one thing I can pinpoint, but it, like he said, it just feels different watching this group. And I think there was last year a pretty big disconnect between, you know, some of the upperclassmen and the underclassmen as far as roles and different things of that nature. And this year it seems like everyone's more bonded together. Guys seem to genuinely, you know, care and like each other quite a bit on the court. There's just better chemistry, and I know that's cliche to say, but you can tell with the way these guys share the ball, the way that, you know, it doesn't matter really who's the leading scorer as long as they win. I mean, I feel like that's the mentality at this point. And there were a lot of times last year where they just simply had too many guys on the court that couldn't make plays, and it was too pinned on one or two guys to kind of bail them out in every situation. And this year they're not putting many lineups out there where they have somebody that can't score, and that just makes it more fun to watch, because, you know, last year it was, you know, a lot of quote unquote hero ball with Yogi. I mean, a lot of times it would come down to a, you know, 5 or 6 seconds left on the shot clock, and Yogi would have to hoist the shot. This year they're getting quick shots, they're getting quality shots, and as bad as the defense has been so far, the offense has been good enough to kind of bail them out on that. And I think that's kind of like what I was hinting at there on the earlier with the efficiency margin. I think, like, for this team to have sustained success in the Big Ten, I think the defense is going to have to get better. And I think the offense can get better too, but I think, you know, they're going to have a more connected approach on defense, because there's going to be some games coming up where they're not going to shoot as well. They're going to have to get stops to stay in games. And obviously against Illinois, their offense kind of carried them, but there's going to be, like I said, games where, you know, they may shoot 4 of 15 on threes. How are they going to generate offense beyond that? Kind of will tell us if this is like a 12-16, a 10-18, or, you know, somewhere in that range. I think it's going to come down to a lot of close games, and so far they've been winning them, and we'll see if that continues.
Hey, and in terms of differences, are you making a point to get the 5 takeaways article up sooner? Because it feels like it's up a lot quicker this year than it was last year after each game.
Well, yeah, yesterday I got it up quick because I was in Champaign and had to drive back, and I knew with Monday coming up, we're going to have a lot of stuff early Monday morning, so I wanted to get it up quickly. Yeah. It's going to kind of be on a game-by-game basis as far as when I get it up, as far as like when the next game's coming and kind of what we have coming content-wise. But I felt yesterday it was one of those things where, you know, you're kind of in the moment. The game just ended. You got a long car ride home. I kind of wanted to just go ahead and get it out there and get it published. A lot of people were excited and on the site, so I think the more content in those situations, the better, because people were obviously excited about the win. And I'm sure after the Colts came last night, they were right back on the site trying to read more IU basketball stuff. So that's good.
I'm sure they were. Well, hopefully one of your key takeaways after the Maryland game is that these Hoosiers are a legit contender for the Big Ten title at 5-1. But we'll find out Thursday. Big game. We'll see what the Hoosiers have. But thanks for your time, Alex. And we'll all be checking Inside the Hall after that game for all your guys' awesome post-game coverage.
Thank you for having me. And thanks for doing such a great job hosting the podcast. I appreciate it.
Thank you. All right, man. Talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Podcast on the Brink. Quick reminder, make sure that you go to assemblycall.com/live and insidethehall.com after every IU game for the most complete reaction and analysis that you will find anywhere. Thank you again for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, we sure would appreciate a rating or a review on iTunes if you would be kind enough to give us one of those. With that said, everybody get ready for a big game Thursday night, and we'll be back in a couple weeks with another episode of Podcast on the Brink.
We'll be right back.